This is Topical Talks by Title Research, the podcast about estate administration, probate, and all other areas in the wills and probate legal sector.
Welcome to Topical Talks with Title Research.
So this is a podcast where we talk to fellow legal professionals about their specialism and current popular topics of conversation in the legal sector. My name is Anthony Alsop and I'm head of business here at Title Research. Today I am joined by Nigel Merchant, who is technical manager at King's Court Trust. For those of you who are unaware, King's Court Trust is an award-winning probate and estate administration provider. And Nigel himself has been with King's Court Trust for 14 years and conducted well over 2,000 family meetings. He's built up a huge amount of technical probate and estate administration knowledge in that time.
We've got an interesting discussion ahead of us today where we're going to explore
the biggest industry news stories from 2020. As you can imagine, a lot of it is going to be related to COVID and the effect that that's had on the legal sector in different ways. So welcome, Nigel.
Hi, Anthony, and hello, everybody listening to the podcast.
Thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
So first thing I wanted to talk about was something that's affected, I guess, everyone in the country, and we'll talk about specifically how its effect on legal practice has panned out for King's Court Trust. So obviously, around about March 2020, the country went into a full national lockdown, so there was restrictions on travel. Obviously, it all happened quite quickly comparative to other lockdowns that have come about. So lots of businesses have had to respond differently. We had to respond to that. How has it affected King's Court Trust and how have you adapted to working from home?
I suppose it was a bit of a shock bolt out of the blue for everybody come March time, wasn't it? So I think in hindsight, the business was pretty well positioned to be able to work from home. Being an estate administration business, we were always open, if you like. We were classified as a critical business, so we were always able to open and continue to trade. But actually, the problems of working from home are all apparent. I think everybody put their hands up to say, yeah, they've had a few technology issues and all that kind of thing. And we saw a complete, as we deal with many, many business partners, we saw a complete cross-section of going from a one-man band to a corporate partner, the differences in being able to just flick a switch sometimes and it was business as normal, or actually losing contact with somebody for a few days because they were just having to work out getting computers to home and all those kind of things. So it was a trying time. I think everybody is probably pretty well adapted to it now through the course of the year, but yes, at the time there was certainly it certainly concentrated everybody's mind, I think, on what we needed to do. From King's Court point of view, I think we were pretty well positioned. We have a business contingency plan, and we practice that, if you like, every year. So it wasn't a bolt out of the blue for us where we were scratching heads and actually, what do we do? So I think it was fairly seamless. We were able to keep the offices open, which was a great benefit as well. So there was a very restricted, limited number of people in the office as well, which was able to keep the flow of work going for people that were working from home. So overall, the business didn't come to a grinding halt. But at the same time, just like everybody else, we obviously had a few technical issues along the way.
It's the thing that's become apparent now is as well that it's almost become normal, whereas at the beginning it wasn't.
Yeah, and I think there's probably loads of businesses across all sections, all sectors of life, if you like, that are now looking at what they've got in front of them and say, actually, do I need an office? So I'm sure there will be many many businesses to say, well, actually, now I've got myself set up, it's probably a lot cheaper from a business rent and rates point of view to be working from home. But that isn't practical for every business. So I think, yeah, I think it is an opportunity, if you like, for businesses to be able to look at their costs and their do a sort of feasibility study and things like that. But yeah, it has opened up a lot of doors, and we've had to think of things just very differently for the last 9 months and beyond, haven't we?
We have. Look, I think throughout this, one of the other things that came into focus, and specifically in the sort of probate, estate administration, private client sector, is the huge reliance on paper documents. And that's clearly been a challenge. Has that been a challenge for King's Court Trust, and what have you had to do to try and overcome those?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's not without its problems. The industry we're in, there's only so much that you can do remotely. And if you think about, you know, we're dealing with estates, so we're dealing with wills, and the probate office, and they still want those documents. So it's not, you know, we're not in a position to scan something in and just send it off. We still are actually having to send paperwork around the country to the probate offices to get grants and things like that. And similarly, when a grant is issued, we want an original document back, because institutions will want to see those documents probably as well in the flesh, as it were, rather than just seeing a scanned copy. And then you then stray off into all the areas of, you know, fraud and all those kind of things as well. So yes, I mean, we, you know, there is a lot of paperwork that we've been able to slim down on, so get a lot of it scanned in, but there are still some very core basic documents like the wills and codicils and things like that do still do need death certificates, particularly do still need to be originals.
I know, obviously, on the title research, the work that we do is equally reliant on paper documents. Obviously, we order thousands of birth, marriage, death certificates a year. We were impacted by the GRO, obviously. Just being physically able to receive post as well became a challenge that you have to overcome. So it's certainly taught us a few things about business processes and things like that.
Yeah, and on top of that, it was then just trying to, even if you did get the paper, it was then just trying to speak to people. Sometimes, as simple as it may sound, to pick up the phone, it wasn't that easy to get hold of people, was it?
No. The other thing come out of this is obviously us and a lot of people, I'm sure, around the UK have become very accustomed to working on Microsoft Teams. I think Zoom shares went up quite rapidly in value at the beginning of all this. Do you think this sort of modern way of working will continue post-pandemic within the industry?
Yeah, I think ultimately there's certainly a place for it. And as I say, for you know, you can. I don't think the face-to-face process is a thing of the past by any stretch of the imagination. I still think a lot of business will be done that way. But I think there's also an awful lot of potential travelling around and lost. You know, if you think you're jumping in the car and driving for a couple of hours to get somewhere, there's a lot of unproductive time there as well. And if that can be done over the technology, like you say, a Zoom or a team call or something similar, all the technology has been around for such a long time. I think that is something that is going to be much more of a balance for a business and a huge cost saving as well.
Absolutely. And we said at the start, obviously, with your experience and background, you've conducted quite a few family meetings, it's fair to say. Has that obviously been impacted in a different way?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, I haven't been out on the road as much, but you know, fortunately, the way that our business works with the technology that we've got in place, we don't need to do that. We would never refuse a family, you know, following a death, a face-to-face meeting if they wanted it. And again, I think we naturally tend to think of more of an elderly population, and how people would, you know, I think before the pandemic, we would say that, you know, mums and dads or elderly relatives would not want to get used to the technology, and because of what's happened over the 9 months, they just have done. And I think they found it a lot of the time a breath of fresh air that they can speak to family and particularly grandchildren at drop of a hat, where they wouldn't naturally have done that kind of thing in the past.
Okay. Going to move on to the topic of remote witnessing of wills. So here we're talking, so the Wills Act 1837, temporarily amended. I think the key and salient part of this is that the meaning of the word presence to include digital presence changed to allow wills to be witnessed remotely. So this came into force September 2020, and was a retroactive from 31st of January, and will remain in force. So I guess the question on that is, it probably raises a few concerns about this approach. What do you think, as a professional, could be facing on that, and what caution should be taken?
There's quite a lot to this, really. So I think the overarching view that it was right to have something put in place, because there would undoubtedly be some really difficult situations that arose if there wasn't some kind of adaptation to the law, if you like, where, because obviously if we're particularly for will signing and things like that and witnessing, you have to have two, England and Wales, you have to have two witnesses present at the same time watching somebody sign. So I think very early on in the lockdown, there was quite a lot of discussion about, you know, can this be done? How can it be done safely? All those kind of things. But at the same time, it had to comply with the law. So there's been quite a few over recent months, there's been quite a few different subject areas that have talked about, glad it's only temporary, because, you know, potentially it may bring up easier claims to the validity of a will and things like that. If the people wanting to, I think challenges on wills generally on the up anyway, before we even start about thinking about, well, actually, was somebody there? Was somebody on a, you know, was somebody on a video link, or how was it done? Those kind of things. So having said that, there was pretty good guidance that was put in place on how it could be done. So initially it started off, well, actually, if we wanted to be respectful of somebody, if you like, rather than actually having to be sat right by them seeing them sign it, you could do it at a distance. So that could be over the, if it was a next door neighbor, it could be over the garden fence or something like that. But it then raised questions about, you know, could you do it through a window, through an open door, you know, inside a car and outside a car, all those kind of little conundrums then started to come up. But in simple practice, the answer to that was yes. The main thing about it, I think, was that if you look at all the guidance that's there, the clear thing is for a clear line of sight. So you could have two, you know, for somebody was signing in their back garden and the neighbours were next door, as long as they actually could see the person sign, they were then in a position to be able to hand the document over, and then as long as the testator, so the person that was actually making the will, could actually see the witness's sign, albeit that it was slightly at a distance, then that was going to be acceptable. It then sort of went on to more of the technology about, could this be done sort of by, you know, being on a Teams call or being on a Zoom call. And again, the answer is yes, but again, fairly strict guidelines needed to be in place for obvious reasons. And the other thing, if you were using the technology, which was a good idea, is that it was suggesting you should actually record it, and that could be used to actually, if you like, if it was challenged later in court, it could be used to say, well, actually, no, it was done correctly and along with the guidelines. So, it's good that this is in place and it runs until, I think it is 2022, isn't it? So I think these are good things, but I think if you're asking my opinion, I would say these should be last resort type of processes rather than using them as the norm.
So you referenced January 2022 then, that's when the legislation is in place until. So is your thought process that it should be removed post that date, or do you think that
it would be on the bait? Well, is again getting back to what we call normal. I think we've forgotten what normal looks like, don't we? So on the basis that we get back to some kind of normality, I would expect these type of things to be retracted, because I do think they do cause some difficulty. So particularly if you're looking at the, if you think about the witnessing of a document online, the instructions are saying, well, actually, when the person that's going to be signing the will is meant to be holding up the piece of paper to the camera to show you which page they're about to sign. They've then got to sign it, but you're meant to be able to see them sign it rather than just see their head and shoulders. You're meant to be able to see them actually write their signature on the piece of paper. And then ultimately that's then got to be sent off to the witnesses, so that's got to be posted or whatever, and the recommendation is that they should witness it within 24 hours, but that's not particularly practical. Sometimes it might take a few days to get to them, but then they've got to do the complete reverse. They've then got to show the document via the camera on the laptop or whatever to the person that's making the will to say this is where I'm going to sign, and then the testator needs to be able to actually see them sign rather than see their head and shoulders. So it's fraught with danger, I think, from a challenge point of view. So yeah, I see this more as a temporary thing, and I think the government were quite clear to point out that they've extended it till 2022, but if we fingers crossed do get back to some normality a bit quicker than that they may amend the processes prior to that date, but they've certainly put that date out there to give everybody a fair chance, I think.
Yeah, I think it was what was needed at the time to allow things to move forward. I'm sure the debate will continue in the interim.
Yeah, indeed. And as I say, it's right to have it. I'm not sure that there would be any huge volume, but obviously there's the other side of the coin is the fraud and all those kind of angles that go with it. So it's very difficult if you're not there about, coercion and all those kind of things, which are the normal kind of challenges that come up with a will, sadly, after somebody's died.
So obviously we're in the realms of the online world, which gives us a good link into the next topic. So we wanted to talk about online submissions of probate applications. And I won't go through the sort of ins and outs of that. I think everyone's probably aware, but we're talking about November 2020 and the new rules that came into force. There was an amendment to the non-contentious probate rules. But essentially, we're talking about an online application process, in essence, for probate. What do you think of this move?
Well, I think this was coming anyway, so I don't think this is a necessary. COVID has had any particular, this hasn't kick-started this process. I think it was already there. We've known for some time that the probate courts, if you like, have been looking to, in their words, upgrade, come into the 21st century, that kind of thing. And this is all part of, no doubt, a bit of a cost-cutting exercise, I would say. So it was all in train anyway, for most simple applications, like you say, it is a much quicker, slicker system. I think there's still a lot of frustration out there, particularly for clients. You're applying for a grant and it can take months to get a grant, when in these days you would think it would come through a lot quicker. So I think the process, like you say, November 2020, I mean, that has been extended a bit now as far as paper applications into the new year, into sort of, I think it's about the 11th of January 2021 now. But yeah, I think this is just the overall streamlining process, and it would just become the norm of the way to do things. And the more complex estates, will be something that will just have to be worked through the system. I'm sure there will be a few hiccups along the way, because there'll be, how do we deal with this? How do we deal with that when estates are a bit more complex rather than just the simple non-taxable estates? But yeah, I think it's here to stay. And it's just trying to work through with the system. But I think we, all of us, have not got to lose sight that there's a client at the end of it. And if it's, you know, systems are crashing and things like that, and delays, we've had so many delays with grants being issued over the last 12 months that have caused a lot of pain for a lot of people. I think that you just need to get it a bit more streamlined and make it more client friendly.
Well, I think that's the key thing. We talk about probate and estate administration. Ultimately, we're dealing with bereaved families, aren't we? I think we're always going to move online. The world is moving online, but it's important that that platform works well.
Yeah, and I think you've had the, I think initially when this first started, you know, we're probably talking about 12 months ago, well, not quite that far back, but there was a period where they started, you know, the courts started to upgrade their systems and everything crashed. And there was a period, I think it was around April time from memory, that there wasn't any grants of probate being issued anywhere in the country. And that's just, you know, that's just no good for nobody. So you get these kind of problems that come along. But unfortunately, you can't just flick a switch and sort it out. It's then taken many, many months to clear the backlog, and COVID has then caused more problems as well. So yeah, it's been a pretty uncomfortable, bumpy ride for the last 12 months for us as a trying to provide a service, but also for the families at the end of the process as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And King's Court Trust, any personal experience of the online application system?
Not personally, but I mean, obviously, the office, we've been doing the online applications for some time, and I think generally the frustrations are around, like you say, the backlog and trying to get that cleared. You know, we're trying to do our level best to provide a, you know, gold star service for the client, but if we're having to give another update to say no, we're still awaiting the grant, it can be really frustrating. I think it's just been the normal. It's been the normal problems with being a volume provider, if you like, is then just having, we've had a bigger backlog than we would like, and despite regular chasing and asking for regular updates, is difficult to get the wheels to turn a bit quicker.
Yeah. Okay. So, final question, and staring into your crystal ball, we're moving into 2021. Yep. Any predictions for the legal sector in the forthcoming year?
Nothing mind-boggling, I don't think. Nothing mind-boggling to what we've already been through for all the different type of things we've had to cope with this year. But I think there will just be I think there will be, from the court's point of view, they've been trying to update, and COVID has undoubtedly slowed that down by many, many, many months. So it's difficult to gauge how far they've got through that process. But I think there will just be more. There probably will be some more technology changes as far as the courts are concerned. I think hopefully that will then just settle down in 2021 and become a bit more streamlined, and everybody, including the courts, will start to see the benefit of it. They'll be able to process quicker. Everybody, you know, that will be a win-win for everybody. So I think that's the main thing, really. I think you'd just like to get through of when, you know, we would like to be able to, relying on a third party to produce to process documents quickly. You know, things like inheritance tax and things like that aren't going to go away, are they? With lots of borrowing being taken up in the last 12 months, and that's going to continue well into 2021. You know, taxes across various different avenues are still going to have to remain in place to look to some form of repayment. I don't, you know, inheritance tax is one of those tax that I think everybody hates with a passion kind of thing, but it it has its place, and it's not going to go away. So I think really it's just the streamlining, the updating of the systems, and hopefully we don't get too many bumps along the way.
Absolutely. Okay, well, brief chat on some of the main legal sector related things, you know, in the estate administration world, and thanks for joining us. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for the invite, and yeah, good to talk it through, really.
Thank you. So thanks for listening to our final podcast of the year. We hope you've enjoyed ones from earlier on this year. If you'd like to catch up on any of the previous episodes, they're obviously available on our website, so titleresearch.com/podcast. For myself and the team at Title Research, obviously I'd like to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And of course, we'll look forward to bringing you more insightful content in 2021.